Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kufayin Vavam Nalev by the two dots. The Gemara here is quoting from the Mishnah, Hotzi Alav Ktav Yodo. If they bring a document that has the debtor's writing in it, Shu Chayav Lo, and the indications from his writing are that he's obligated, Govem Nechasim B'nei Chorin. You're only allowed to collect from free and clear property. That doesn't generate any lien or encumbrances that allow the creditor to go after other parties. So, Baim Minei Rabba Bar Natan Mirab Yochanan, Hu Chazak Ktav Yodo B'beit Din Mai. If we establish that the signature here, or the writing here, is of that of the Loveh, so that could be either because the Loveh himself admits to that fact, you can see that in the Rashbam, or it could be because we have Edim come and testify to that fact, you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom. So they have now verified his handwriting in Beit Din, whether it's his handwriting, whether it's his signature, they do have a verification by Beit Din of this document that the Loveh, the debtor, is admitting to the fact that he owes this money, and then he says that he needs to pay the creditor this amount of money. My, what is the din here? So now the question, and you can see this in the Rashbam, it's a question about how does Kiyum Shtarot work over here. When we look at the Kiyum Shtar is a Masa Beit Din. That's an action of Beit Din. And an action of Beit Din includes Edim and includes publicity that surrounds it. And we said before that when it comes to issues that are of a public nature, then the creditor has a right then to go and collect even from encumbered properties. He gets a lien on the property because of the publicity, and therefore buyers subsequent to that point in time have to beware of that fact. Or do we say here that the Masa Beit Din is not coming to change the nature of the shtar, but simply to verify that which exists in the shtar already? And that's how the Rashbam phrases it over here. Odilma kiyum shtar eno mo'el l'shum shtar. That the kiyum of Beit Din doesn't change the nature of a shtar. All it does is verify the shtar so that it is just like it was before. Meaning whatever the shtar was until this point in time, it's able to verify that, validate that, and will give the creditor then the power to bring this document out and have the debtor not be able to deny it, or have the debtor not be able to say that it's mizuyaf, because we have verification or validation of the fact that this is a good document. So now, once you've established that it is a good document, all that it does is says that whatever the document was before is now a valid document. It doesn't change the nature of the document. So that's the question that the Gemara is posing over here. Does the validation in Beit Din change it now into a shtar that has achrayut associated with it? It generates a lien because it's a Maisa Beit Din. Or does the Maisa Beit Din simply verify or validate whatever existed until this point in time in the shtar? So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, even if we have validated his handwriting or his signature in Beit Din, you only have a right to collect from free and clear property. So that here, of course, you can only collect from free and clear property from the original date of the shtar, because the original date of the shtar, the way that we're learning, or the way that Rabbi Yochanan has explained to us, is that the validation of Beit Din doesn't change the shtar itself. So therefore, you can't take from nechasim mishubadim, from encumbered properties. You don't have a lien from the original date of the shtar. Now, in terms of the tokef of the shtar at this point in time, it seems from what we've learned here that you would say that the shtar itself now is validated to the point where the debtor cannot deny the shtar, and where the debtor cannot say parati, that he already paid it back because of the fact that Beit Din has validated it. That turns out, of course, to be a machloket in the Rishonim, that this is still considered to be either a milveh al peh, according to the Rambam, the Rif, and others. Although there are those like the Yad Ramah and some of the other poskei Ashkenaz that want to suggest that even though here you can't collect from nechasim mishubadim, you still can't deny the shtar. And that's the way we've been explaining it until now, which is that, yes, you validate the shtar. It doesn't do anything to change the dynamic of the shtar. It doesn't become a start with a lien now, because it wasn't a valid star to start with. But nevertheless, it's still a valid enough document that you can bring it to court, and the debtor cannot deny the fact that he owes the money. So now, Meitiv Rami Bar Chama, Shlosha Gitin Psulim. There are three Gitin, which we're going to explain or see in a second. This is a Mishnah in Gitin. Vimni Seit. But if you do get married, one of these Gitin of Lad Kasher. So, Lichat Chila, we're going to say these are Gitin Psulim. And there are many reasons why you would think that these gitin are psulim. But bidiavad, if the woman gets married after receiving such a get and has children, the children are born are not considered to be mamzerim. And these are the three Gittin. We're not going to go into the details of these Gittin. That's discussed in the Gemara and Gittin, as well as in the Rishonim and Gittin, as to what the opinion of the Tana of this Mishnah is. Is this Rabbi Meir? Is this Tana some other Tana besides Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar? It's not clear. Again, from our Gemara over here, it's not going to be clear, but from the Gemara and Gittin, it's also not clear. And that's why the Rishonim argue about exactly why, in this instance, do we say that even though the Gittin, l'chatchila are psulim, nevertheless, b'diavad, they are ksherim. Is that because Rabbi Meir b'diavad agrees to Rabbi Lazar's position that edim misira karte? Or is it because there's another Tana who really believes that these types of Gittin are valid Gittin, but there are takanat chachamim or gzerot chachamim that say they are pasul for different reasons, because of mistakes that could be made or problems that could arise? Meilhen, these are the three Gittin. Ktav, b'ktav yado, is a get written in his handwriting, vein alav edim, but there are no signatories to the get. Yesh alav edim, vein bozman, is a full get with edim, with witnesses signed to it, but it doesn't have any date in it. Yesh bozman, it has a date in the get, vein bo ela ed achat, and there's only one aid signed to it. There, the Gemara in Gittin speaks about the fact that possibly that the handwriting is the handwriting of the sofer, so that might create a second aid in that situation. All these three gittin, l'chatchilar psulin, b'mnisei tavlad kasher. And if she gets married, b'diavad, and has children, then the vladot, the children are born of that marriage, are ksherim, they're not considered to be mamzerim. You have a repetition of that general statement or header that says that this is the din here with regards to these three, and there the Gemara asks, harei elu shlosha gittin psulin, what is that coming to exclude, or how is this different than other gittin? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Apopi Shein Alav Edim, Elazar says that even if you have a get without signatories to it, then it's totally fine. Lichat Chila, El Shenatnu La Bifnei Edim, because it was given before Edim, Edim Sira Kasher, V'Guva Minichasim Mishubadim. And she has a right with that to go after Nichasim Mishubadim. It's actually a machloket here. I read it as V'Guva. The truth is that it could be V'Guva Minichasim Mishubadim. That depends on what you think that the Nechasim Mishubadim that we're speaking about over here. You look in the Rashbam, he reads it, and seemingly the word, he reads the word is Goveh, Minechasim Mishubadim, Klomar, Bimshtar Milvehu. This is a new statement of the Gemara. It's not a continuation of the previous part about the Gittin, but a new statement in Rav Elazar's opinion, which is that Edei Mesira Karte, that the Edim that witnessed the transference of the document, they become the Edim to this document, and you can see this in the Rishbam. He says, "Shafilu b'shar shtarot, even in other documents, govem nechasim mishubadim be'edei misira bilvat. Just with edei misira, it's sufficient in order to allow you to collect from nechasim mishubadim or to create a lien in the properties of the debtor because there are edei misira." This is the machloket that we saw again just a couple of daf ago. We've seen it before in Masechet Gittin, which is Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir argue as to whether Eide Misira Karte or Eide Chatima Karte. So Rabbi Meir believes Eide Chatima Karte, which is the signatories to the document, are what give the document its tokef, give it its power, its validation, and execute on whatever is written in there. Now then, Rabbi Elazar believes that the Eide Misira Karte, that the Edim that witness the transference of the document from one party to the other, they are the true witnesses, they are the ones that give it its tokef, give its validation. The witnesses that are signed there, mibitnei tikkun olam, they're there in order to facilitate the ability to figure out whether the shtarot are good shtarot, or to figure out who the edim were. That's all a takanat derabanan, midoraita, that the edim misira are karte. You see from this position of Rabbi Elazar about edim misira karte, so you see from that, and you could extrapolate from what he's saying here, that the gittin that are mentioned in that Mishnah are valid gittin lechatchila as long as there are edei misira. Edei misira give it tokef, and they can make it into a shtar that is good enough to collect with, that is good enough to have a lien on the properties of the debtor. So why, in our case, does Rabbi Yochanan say differently? Rabbi Yochanan over here says that if we have the debtor that's written on the shtar, and beitin comes and validates that, either by him admitting to the fact that it's his signature or it's his writing, or through, as Rabbeinu Gershom says, through Edim coming and testifying to that fact, then why doesn't that create the same situation or simulate what is happening in the case in Gittin, where Rabbi Elazar says that if it's katav b'ktav yoto, if you have a get that's written in the handwriting of the husband, and then it's given over to the woman in front of Edei Mesira, then that's a fine get, that's a good get. So despite the fact that the get itself contains no signatories, but simply has the handwriting of the husband who's trying to divorce this woman, that's enough to make it into a valid get. And according to the Rashbam, that extends to other documents as well. It's not just by a case of a get, but even by shtar milveh, that's what the Gemara is saying over here, v'goveh minichasim mishubadim. Although according to, we'll see in a second, the Rabbeinu Gershom is only speaking at Kitin. So then, in that case, Rabbi Lazar says that the document's valid without signatories to it, just with the handwriting of the bow, or just with the handwriting of the loveh. And yet Rabbi Yochanan over here says the handwriting of the loveh is not enough to create a lien, or to allow the creditor the right to go after nechasim mishubadim, after encumbered property. So Gemara says, Shani Hotam, the case in Gitin is different, demishat ktivahu demishabed nafshei. Because at the point of writing the document, there was an assumption that there would be edim witnessing the event. You can see this in the Rashbam. Rashbam continuing, l'shitato, who believes now that Gemara says that this is not only true in Rabbi Elazar's opinion by Gitin, but even true by shtarei milveh, then in any case of a shtar that is written, the intent of the shtar when it's written is that there will be witnesses to the fact that this shtar is being granted to others, and that the edim misira karte. So Hilkach came into the Rabbi Elazar, edim misira karte, this is what the Rashbam says, since according to Rabbi Elazar, the edim misira are the ones that give tokef to this shtar, they're ki'ilu nechtemu b'toch ha-shtardam, it's as if they're signed into the shtar. It's as if they are actual signatories to the shtar, even though they never do actually sign the shtar. On the other hand, in case of the shtar that we're speaking about here in our Mishnah, that Rabbi Yochanan commented on, shalom naseh shtar b'lishon shel shtar she'edim chatumim bo. So the Rashbam points out, the shtar was never written with the intent that other edim would be witness to it. That means not witness to it through edim misira, not witness to it to be signed in it. In the case by the get, in the case by other shtarot, according to the Rashbam, the shtar was drawn up in a manner that indicated that there were witnesses to it. Whether the witnesses are actually physically signed in it, whether they're edim misira who are considered as if they are signed in the document, nevertheless, the document was drawn up with that intent. Since it was drawn up with that intent, the edim misira give it the strength now to have a lien on the property of the debtor. So the intent to write it in that manner, and then the actual edim witnessing it are what give it that tokef, give it that strength to be a valid get or a valid document of collection and give them a lien in the properties of the debtor and the properties of the husband. Now then, in our case, where the debtor simply wrote the document without any intent to have a deem witness it, sign it, then that document can't be changed. Once that document is enforced, meaning that the debtor gave it to the creditor, he can now not all of a sudden add in a shibud. Just because you go to Beit Din and they validate the document, or you have the signature of the debtor be validated, that doesn't change the fact that the shtar wasn't written to have a deem be a party to this shtar. So that's the way that the Rashbam explains it. So that's the way that the Rashbam explains it. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's towards the area where the Rabbeinu Gershom narrows. It says, V'kashalach. It says, the first question is, Heichem matzit makshe gavra migavra mirabbi Elazar l'Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, how are you asking a question on Rabbi Yochanan's opinion from Rabbi Elazar's opinion? V'teiretzachi. And the answer is that Breita here, it's really Mishnahi, V'ubreita matzit makshe. So, I don't know if there's some confusion in the Rabbeinu Gershom because there was Rabbi Yochanan and his Talmid Rabbi Elazar, but the Gemara over here is not quoting Rabbi Elazar the Amora, it's quoting Rabbi Elazar the Tano. And so that's, I think, what the Rabbeinu Gershom is noting over here, is that the question of Rabbi Yochanan is coming not because it's Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, but because it's a Tana against the position of the Amora Rabbi Yochanan. V'amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan, and then Rabbi Yochanan responds, halo kashali. That's not really a question for me. Hotam amai gavi mishabde. Over there, the reason you're allowed to collect from encumbered property is de'ika ktuba biada, that she has a ktuba in hand, de'ika shtara ma'alya, the mishat ktuba shiabed nafshe. From the moment that the ktuba was written, then he already encumbered himself. He gave her the right of a lien in his property. Avahachad lo shtar ma'alyahu. Dein alav edim, in our case, where it was never a shtar ma'aliyah, but my matzik gavim mishabde, then what right do you have to collect from that encumbered property? So what you see from the Rabbeinu Gershom is twofold. Number one is that when the Gemara says that you're allowed to collect v'goveh minichasim mishubadim, that's how he read it for the Rashbam, he reads for v'govah. She has the right to collect minichasim mishubadim. So now the Gemara is continuing along the lines of saying that this is a get, and that get grants her the right to collect from encumbered property, gives her a lien in his property. where it says, so why over there is it true that the get, without Edim signed to it, gives her that right? And yet, by our case, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't say with the handwriting of the debtor gives you such a right. The answer is that the get has a different strength going for it, and that is the fact that there was a ketubah that preceded it. The encumbrance was created through the ketubah. The ketubah granted the lien to the woman, and the get is just the thing that triggers her ability to collect on that lien. So the reason that the get works over there is because mi'ikoro, from the beginning, they were mishabet nafshei by the ketubah. The ketubah generated the lien, and now the get just triggers the lien. In our case of here, by Rabbi Yochanan, we simply have the debtor written into the document. There was no document that ever gave you a right. There was no document with edim in it. And since there's no document with any edim in it, there was never a document that generated the lien that this document can trigger, or this statement of the debtor can trigger. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom writes. You can tell that the Rashbam knew about this Girsa of the Rabbeinu Gershom, because way at the end of his Perush here, he says, Keni Rav Einai Shmua Zu V'cheni Kar. This is the right way to explain this Gemara. V'hidagarse Mishat HaKtuba. There's some people have the Girsa, which is the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Gershom, that it's Mishat HaKtuba. V'lo Yadu L'Shitat HaShmua. And I really don't understand what they're saying. And you can say a similar thing in the Balei HaTosafot, which is Mishat K'tiva Shabbat Nafshei K'deperish Bakuntris. It's similar to what the Rashbam wrote over here. V'lo Garsinan Mishat K'tuba. And we don't have the Girsa Mishat K'tuba, which is the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Gershom. The Havei Mashma, the Eidei Chatim Mekarte B'K'tuba, the Rabbi Elazar. Because he says, that makes it sound like, and that's exactly what the Rabbeinu Gershom has said now, is that the signatories to the K'tuba are what generate the lien. And the Balei Tosafot point out that it's completely inconsistent in Rabbi Elazar's opinion. V'zeinu, dafilu ein B'K'tuba atzma ela Eidei Mesira kasher. Because the ketubah itself, according to Rabbi Elazar, does not require signatories. They can also be kasher through Eidei Mesira. In that Eidei Mesira can generate the validity of a document, according to Rabbi Elazar, that includes a ketubah, that includes a loan document, that includes a get, anything that is a document that requires signatories to it. The signatures themselves are not what generate the tokeh for the shtar, but rather Eidei Mesira. So the Balei Tosafot would say, I don't understand. Why would you go back to ketubah and say, oh, the get is backed up by a ketubah that has signatories to it? Well, the ketubah doesn't need signatories either. It could also be Eidei Mesira. And that's why they favored the way that we read it originally, that was goveh minechasim mishubadim. An explanation here was about a document of loan and not a bill of divorce, because that explanation keeps it consistent, that Rabbi Elazar's opinion is that the document was written originally with the intent to have it signed, and that's what gives the lien, versus our case of Yibar B'Yochanan, which that was not the case. And then the Tosafot concludes, V'kaimalan kavatei ben begitin ben b'shtarot. Here the Balei Tosafot say, the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, that Eidei Mesira kartei, that's true both by gitin and by shtarot. Now that is not as obvious, as clear as the Balei Tosafot make it out over here. They say that that's the halacha, but there is a machlok between the Balei Tosafot and the Rif, in the Gemara in gitin, as to whether when we say the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, is that halacha only like Rabbi Elazar by Gitin? Or is that halacha by Rabbi Elazar even by Shtarei Halva'ah? And that might also influence how you read the Gemara over here, because clearly the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot, when they're reading the Gemara, think the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar in both cases. And that's why the Gemara can flip over to say, Goveh Minechasim Mishubadim is speaking about a Shtar Milveh. On the other hand, if you believe that that's not the case, that halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar by other Shtarot, then it makes more sense to continue the Gemara to say, Goveh Minechasim Mishubadim, because you're keeping it within the world of Gitin, where the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar. Right now we move on to the next piece of the Mishnah, which is Areva Yotzei Lachar Chitum Shtarot. You have a guarantor that is signed onto the document after the Edim are signed on the document. So we said there that he can only collect Mechnechasim B'nei Chorin. You can only collect from free and clear property. I mean, the creditor can only go after the guarantor for free and clear property. Although then we had the discussion with Rabbi Yishmael and Benanas, where Benana says he thinks that the creditor can't even go after free and clear property. Samarav, kodem chitum shtarot, if the guarantor is included in the document itself before it is signed, govem nechasim mishubadim, then the creditor has the right to go after not only the lovez encumbered property and have a lien on the debtor's property, as a lien on the arev's property as well. Lachar chitum shtarot, on the other hand, if his guarantee comes after the shtar is signed, Goveh minechasim b'nei chorin, then he's only allowed to collect from free and clear property. Zimnin amar Rav, afilu kodem chitum shtarot, einu goveh ele minechasim b'nei chorin. Sometimes Rav would say, even if he's found inside the document itself, before the signatures of the Edim, still the Arev is only on the hook for free and clear property. There is no lien that is generated through this document on the property of the Arev. Gemara says, Kasha the Rav of the Rav. Why does Rav sometimes say that it's found before the signatures that that's binding and it makes the Arev subject to a lien? And sometimes he says they're not subject to a lien. Gemara says, Lo Kasha, Haktiv Bei Ploni Arev, Hadichtiv Bei U Ploni Arev. It depends if it has the Vava Chibur in there. If it does not have a Vava Chibur in there, then you have the star written, and then it says so-and-so is a guarantor to the debt that is being extended or the credit that's being extended over here, and then the Eidim are signed. In that case, the way the Rishbam reads it, and most of the Rishonim read it, is that he's now signing. When the Eidim sign then, they're signing on the star. And they probably are not signing on the guarantee that's there because the guarantee is made as an independent statement. On the other hand, if you write Uploni Arev, where you have the Vava Chibur there, then the Arevut is included in basically the body of the shtar, and the Edim, when they sign it, they're signing on both aspects. And so that's why you get the two opinions of Rav. If it says Ploni Arev in there, then you would only have free and clear property that you could go after. There's no lien extended onto the property of the Arev because the statement about the Arev is independent. And when the Edim signed, they only signed on the core document. They didn't sign on that Arevut. On the other hand, if it says Uploni Arev, that is so-and-so is also a guarantor to the debt that is being extended here, then not only are they signing on the core document, they're also signing on their Arevut, and that generates a lien on the properties of the Arev. And that will explain the different views that we saw in Rav's opinion before. The truth is that you could read this, although most Rishonim do not read it this way, is that the signature of the Edim only goes on the Arev and not on the core document, because that's the last thing written in the document. And then if the Edim sign on the document, if it says Ploni Arev, maybe they're just signing on the Arevut and not on the core document. On the other hand, if it says Uploni Arev, then they have to be signing on both items because the Vava Chibur connects between the two items. So you could read it that way, although you can see here in the Rishonim that the majority of them do not read it that way, but rather the way that I read it first. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Echad Zeh, Vechad Zehnu Guvel Mechassim Bnei Chorin. Ve'afagav Dichtivei Uploni Arev. And that's even if Ploni Arev is written into there. Doesn't matter whether you wrote Ploni Arev, or he wrote Uploni Arev. He disagrees with Rav and says that the creditor never has a right to go after the encumbered property of the Arev, only his free and clear property, because there's no lien extended through this document. So Meiti Rovo, is that really true? Edim HaChatumim Al Shelat Shalom Beget Pasul. Edim that are signed on a greeting that is found inside of a get, the get is Pasul. Chashin and Shema Al Shelat Shalom Chatmo. Because we worry about the fact that they actually signed onto the Shelat Shalom. So you have a get that is a bill of divorce that's written. And at the end of the bill of divorce, it says, you know, say hi to my wife, who's now going to be my ex-wife. Or at the end of the document, it says, please send my regards to so-and-so over there. And then the Edim are signed on it. So what are the Edim signed on? So the fear here, or based on what we're reading here, is the fear is that the Edim are signed on the Shelat Shalom. So that presents two problems for what we read before. Number one is that we see that when you have a signature at the end of the document, that we don't assume that it's signed on the core document, we actually assume that it's signed on the part that is the last thing written in the document. Over here, the last thing written in the document is the Shelat Shalom. And over here, we assume that the Edim signed on the Shelat Shalom. If that's the case, then with the Arev, it should be that the signature over there actually makes the Arev, or the lien of the Arev, stronger. And that's the question would be about the core star, not about the Arev himself. That's the first question that derives from this. And then Rabbi Yoboah, who seems to have a memra from Rabbi Yochanan, explains that case in Gittin. He qualifies it, and that creates even a secondary problem here, which seemingly disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan's position as well, which is the Dedim Mifarchalei Mini de Rabbi Yochanan, Shelo Pasol, Vishelo Kasher. Whether you have a Vava Chibur or not will change the dynamic here. If the get does not have a Vava Chibur and there's Shelat Shalom afterwards, it's a Pasul get. Vishelo Kasher. If it has a Vava Chibur, then the Edim signed at the end. Not only signed on the Shelat Shalom, they also signed on the get and be a get Kasher. So you have a double-layered question, Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, here, when they sign, they're signing on the Shelat Shalom and not on the Kor Shtar. Before, Rabbi Yochanan says they're signed on the Kor Shtar and not on the Arevut that is at the end. And number two is, here you see a distinction being made between whether there's a Vava Chibur or there isn't a Vava Chibur. And you're telling me before that Rabbi Yochanan makes no such distinction. When it says, Achanami Dichtav Ploni Arev, you're right. In our case, it is also a case where there is no Vava Chibur. And since there is no Vava Chibur, that's why Rabbi Yochanan thinks it's problematic. And then you would have to read, Echad Zeh, Echad Zeh means, no matter where you find the Arev signed, whether he signed before the Edim or after the Edim, if he lacks a Vav Chibur, then you can only collect from Nechasim B'nei Chorin, because then the Edim are not considered to be signed on the Arevut. But then, Yehochi Anu D'Rav. That's the case, then that's identical to the position of Rav, which is the Vav Chibur would generate an obligation or a lien that would allow the creditor to go after the Nechasim Shubadim of the Arev. Without the Vav Chibur, there's no such lien that is generated. That's exactly what Rav said. It says, Ve'ima V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. You have to amend the statement before, not to say that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing Rav, but rather V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that position of Rav, and therefore, as we just explained before, Echadzeh, whether it's before the Chitum Shtarot, or after Chitum Shtarot, that doesn't have a Vav Chibur, that Arev, you can only go after his free and clear property, not his encumbered property, because there was never a lien created for the creditor, because the Edim are not considered to have signed on that Arevut. Of course, when it's afterwards, but even when it's before, if it lacks a Vav Chibur. And then there would be no lien generated in the case of the Arev, and in the case of the Get, it would be a Pusul Get. The truth is that over here, the Shelat Shalom is even more problematic. If you say, first of all, it's a new paragraph, or it's something that's delineated by itself, then it could make it sense, or a lot of sense, that when they're signing, they're only signing the Shelat Shalom and not the Get, because that's the only thing they really read that's connected or associated with their signature. But the truth is that the Shelat Shalom might actually undermine what he's trying to do in the Get. The Get is trying to divorce the woman, separate between them, and create a severing of their relationship. And then right after he creates a severing relationship, he goes back and says, how are you doing? Which makes it sound like he's trying to reestablish the relationship or maintain the relationship. So in many senses, the Shelat Shalom there might actually be a stira to the Get itself, if you believe that his Shelat Shalom is to the woman. If it's to other people, then obviously that's not the case. But the fact is that if it is to that woman, it might be contradictory to the Get. And that's why maybe when they're signed at the bottom, they can't be included in the Get unless there's a Vav Chibur over there. All right, so now the Gemara continues about the last case in the Mishnah. Masid Bavar Tnei Rabbi Shmuel. This incident that came before Rabbi Shmuel, where an Arev signed after the Chitum Shtarot, Rabbi Shmuel says you can collect, the creditor can collect from the free and clear property of the Arev, but not from his encumbered property. And then Ben Nanas came in with his whole mashal, with the person who was choking the other individual in the shuk, and then his friend comes along and says, look, let him go and I'll pay you. And there, Ben Nanas says that, of course the guy is not chayav to pay in that case, because he was just doing that as a mitzvah to protect his friend. He wasn't really obligating himself to pay. And certainly the creditor didn't lend the money because of him. The money was lent way before he entered the fray over here. So for that reason, he's not obligated to pay. And similarly in our case, when the Arev is signed after the Chitum Ashtar, then in that case, the Arev is not obligated because there's nothing that obligates him. The loan was not extended because of the Arev in that instance. So because of that, he thinks you can't even go after free and clear property. There's no obligation on the Arev whatsoever. So now the Gemara says about that. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afo Pi Shekiles Rabbi Shmuel Ben Nanas. The end of the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel compliments Ben Nanas and says, first of all, the greatest part of the Torah is Nizikin. And if you want to learn Nizikin, go learn by Shimon Ben Nanas, because he's the best. So then, Rabbi Shmuel is really praising Ben Nanas. Nevertheless, halacha kimoto. The halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel, and not like Ben Nanas. So the Gemara says, how far does that go? Ibailuhu. Bichanuk mali. What is the din by chanuk? So now, the Gemara is saying, by a case where the Arev is signed at the bottom of the document, then he is obligated to pay. He's obligated to pay if the loved disappears, defaults. But he's also obligated only to pay out of his free and clear property, not from encumbered property, because there was no lien created because he's after the signature of the edim in the document. So that's like Rabbi Shmuel's original position. That's the locha. But then Ben Nanas also brought a mashal. The case where in the shuk you have a guy throttling a debtor. The creditor is trying to shake him down to get his money back. So he's got him by his neck and he's trying to get his money. And a friend of the debtor comes by and says to the creditor, look, just drop him. I'll pay you. Don't worry about it. Question is the Arev then obligated? Ben Nanas says he's not obligated to pay in that case because he only did it to save his friend. He didn't do it because he really obligated himself. And again, the reason being that the creditor did not lend the money to the debtor based on this guarantee of the guarantor. The guarantor entered the fray way too late for that to be the case. So then, what is Rabbi Shmuel's opinion about that example of Ben Nanas? That's the Gemara's question over here. Is Rabbi Shmuel's position that he says that you still have an obligation in the Arev, does that extend to the case of Chanuk or not? So that's what the Gemara is trying to clarify over here. Mali Amar Rabbi Shmuel. What did Rabbi Shmuel say in this case? Tashma, Damar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chalukaya Rabbi Shmuel, Af Bechanuk. Rabbi Shmuel argued on Ben Nanas, even in that case, about the mashal that he brought in the shuk. Now the Gemara asks, halacha kamoto, ain't halacha kamoto. Okay, he argues, who is halacha like? Ben Nanas? Who is halacha like Rabbi Shmuel? Tashma, Tichat Rav and Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Chalukah Yer Rabbi Shmuel, Af Bichanuk, Velachah Kemoto Af Bichanuk. Rabbi Shmuel argued on bananas, even in that case, of the Mashal, and the Loch is like Rabbi Shmuel in that case as well. So that means Rabbi Shmuel thinks that you will generate an obligation for the Arev to pay both of the Arev signs onto the document, even after the signature of the Edim on the credit document. If they sign on there, they obligate themselves, and the creditor can go after them for their free and clear property. And similarly, in the case of the Shuk, where he's throttling the debtor, and he convinces the creditor to let the debtor go, and he'll pay him, he is obligated. He did obligate himself, and now he will have to repay that money if the debtor really doesn't have any money to pay it. So that'll be the way that we would come out based on Rabbi Yochanan's reading or explanation of Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. On the other hand, we have Shmuel who argues on that. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Chanok, mikanomi ado mishtabeit. The only way that the case by this issue in the Shuk, where the creditor's throttling the debtor, and the friend of the debtor comes along and asks him to drop him and I'll pay you, he's only obligated to pay it if kanomi ado, if they created a kinyan on the spot. So in that case, the arev, the guarantor, cannot be obligated unless there's a kinyan. And that is for obvious reasons, which is that in the case where the arev or the guarantor is present at the time that the loan is extended, his obligation stems from the fact that he is the facilitator of the loan. The creditor can say, I would never have lent the money without your guarantee. And therefore, he is obligated to pay because he is the one who caused the loan to be extended. In the case in the Shuk, credit was already extended. The loan was given out without this guarantor. So now, when he comes along and says, let the guy go and I'll pay you, there's nothing that can obligate the Arev in that case. He's not the one that's facilitating the loan. He's not changing any dynamic in the loan that was extended originally. So therefore, in order for him to be obligated, according to Shmuel, he has to have a kinyan. Kinyan then obligates him not because he's an Arev, but obligates him because he made a kinyan. It's as if he now entered the fray as a party to repay on behalf of the debtor. And that kinyan will obligate him. So now Gemara says, Michlal, from that you would infer, the arev, the alma, lo bai kinyan. That a normal guarantor does not require a kinyan. Uplige, de Rav Nachman. And this argues on Rav Nachman, the amar of Nachman. Rav Nachman says that by irregular arev de beitin hu de lo bai kinyan. An arev who is generated through a case of beitin, he doesn't require a kinyan. Haba alma, bai kinyan. But in general, you would require a kinyan. Now Reva Beit Din is a case where an individual is found guilty in Beit Din, or Beit Din obligates him to pay, and a guarantor steps in and says, let him go, I will pay on his behalf. In that case, we say that the Arev is Chayav to pay, for a similar reason that we're going to say in a second. We said this a couple of daf ago, and the Gemara is going to paskin that way in a second, which is that the Arev is Mishabed Nafshei because of the Hana'ah. The benefit that he gets, that Beit Din relies on him and trusts him. So that is the consideration that has been given here that will now obligate the Arev to follow through and pay. So what Rav Nachman says is that you don't need a kinyan. In that one case, that is an Arev of Beit Din. It's an Arev of Beit Din. The fact that Beit Din relies on this guarantor elevates his status, gives him a certain amount of a pleasure that he is now trusted by Beit Din. He's considered to be a trustworthy individual. That consideration will then obligate him to step in and pay no matter what. And that will make him into a full-fledged Arev. How full-fledged, we'll see in a second. So now, the Hilchata. The loch is Arev Bishat Matan Ma'ot Lo Bai Kinyan. An Arev at the moment that the loan is being extended does not require a Kinyan. That's what we just explained a second ago, which is that at that time, he becomes the facilitator of the loan. The loan wouldn't have been extended without him, and therefore his intervening and guaranteeing the loan is what generated the loan being extended. And therefore he's obligated. And again here, the Gemara said earlier, the consideration is the fact that the parties here trust him. So similarly to what Rav Nachman says by the Beit Din, you can say about the Malven Loveh, since they are relying on this individual, they see him as a trustworthy third party in order to guarantee the loan. That in itself creates consideration or hana'ah for the Arev, and through that he will be bound or obligated to pay the money. And that's why you don't require a kinyan over there. And you can see that Rabbeinu Gershom, the Matzi Amalei, Dilavat, lo nafik zuze mitachat yadei. If it were not for you, I would never have lent the money out. And you can see over here that the Rashbam goes as far as to say, Vin kotov betoch hashtar, la'achar chitum shtarot, that even if he signed after the Edim that are there, the Arev, then you do take it out of nechassim mishubadim. So the Rishbam has a huge chiddush over here, which is that if you are the facilitator of the loan, No matter where you're found in the document, that's whether you're found in the actual content of the document before the signature of the Edim, or even after the signature of the Edim, you will then create an obligation that is so strong that you would go after Nechasim Meshubadim. You would go after the encumbered property of the Arev, or in essence, there's a lien generated on the Arev because he was the facilitator of the loan. You can see there that there's a little Ot Aleph that says that the Rashash changes that to say Kodem Chitum Shtarot, that it has to be before the signature of the Edim. If it's before the signature of the Edim, it would generate a lien that would go after encumbered property. Whereas if it's after the signature of the Edim, the creditor could only go after the free and clear property of the guarantor, which would be the simpler way to read this. It would fit better into what seemingly is the Lashon HaMishnah. But the way that we have the Girsa in the Rashbam, he says, any case where the guarantor facilitates the lending of the money, no matter where he's found in the shtar, that creates a lien on the properties of the Arev. Achar matan mo'ot, anything that happens after the loan is already extended, by kinyan. And that is the case like by Chanuk, where he's, the creditor is throttling the debtor in the shuk. When the other person comes to intervene and try to save the debtor, if he doesn't make a kinyan, then he didn't do anything that can obligate himself. There's no consideration over there. There's no extension of a loan. The loan was already extended. He's just doing a mitzvah to save his friend. He's not doing anything in terms of facilitating a loan. But in the case of here, all he could say is, look, I did this because I wanted to do a mitzvah. I wanted to help out my friend, not because I was going to obligate myself. There the Rashbam again says something interesting. He says, "Vafilu chatum mitoch hashtar." Even if he's found in the body of the shtar, that means before the signature of the Edim, but he was not the facilitator of the loan. The loan was extended before the shtar was signed or before he was entered into the shtar. And whether he's found in the body of the shtar or after the signature of the Edim, you require a kinyan, and therefore you can only go vemi b'nei chorin. You can only have to after his free and clear property of the Arev, and not after the encumbered property because there's no lien that is generated without a kinyan over here because he was not the facilitator of the loan. That's the view of the Rashbam. Though many of the Rishonei Ashkenaz, the Ramban, and many others believe that the Rashbam is incorrect over here, and that if you're found in the body of the shtar, no matter when that is, whether it's you are the facilitator of the loan, or whether that happened even achar matan ma'ot, because you're found in the document before the signature of the Edim, that generates a full-fledged lien on your property, and there is no requirement for a kinyan, and the encumbered property of the Arev would be subject to the lien of the creditor. And so they disagree with the Rashbam that this is only a achar matan ma'ot. Obviously is the case where he's outside the body of the kor shtar. If he was in the body of the kor shtar, that would put him in the first category. Even if he's not facilitating the loan, it would make him an obligated party and give the creditor a lien in the properties of the Arev. And then we have another exception to the rule, which is Arev de Beitin, lo bayi kinyan, that the Arev de Beitin does not require kinyan, vayano dehemen le gamar umishabed le. That with the hana'ah that this individual gets from the fact that Beit Din trusts him and relies on him, that's why he's Meshabed Nafshei. So that can happen even outside of the original loan. So by the case of the lending, if he facilitates the loan, then that hana'ah that he's trusted and he generates the loan, or the fact that the only reason the creditor extended the loan is because of him, in that case he'll be obligated without a kinyan. After that point in time, he cannot be obligated to be an Arev. Elim Kane, there's a kinyan that creates the gemira tadat and the obligation on the individual to become an Arev. The exception that is Beit Din, because in Beit Din, the trustworthiness that he attains by being believed by Beit Din can have application even if it's lo bishat matan ma'ot. Even if it's not at the time of the matan ma'ot, he would still have the ability to generate an obligation because of that hanar consideration that he gets from the fact that he was trusted by Beit Din, and that obligates him even without a kinyan. And just to note, there was an additional girsa that continued after our Gemara that nearly all the Rishonim erase over here. You can see that in the Rashbam. He says, "Velo grasina and hach kula ubay kinyan," that all types of arevut require a kinyan. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he quotes from the Moreh a similar girsa, and he says that it doesn't belong, I can't explain it. And the Balei Tosafot in the previous Amud said the same thing, that they think that you have to erase that. It says with Perish or Kuntris, he says that the Rashbam says you don't put this in the Girsa, V'chein Nira. And he says that seems to be the right way to go over here because the Gemara already addressed all the different manifestations of Arev, and there's nothing left to speak about. And therefore there's no necessity for that extra Girsa at the end of the Gemara. Alright, with that we finish Get Pashut, the 10th Perek of Baba Atra, as well as Masechet Baba Batra. Hadron alach, get pashut, uslikala, masechet bababachrol.